Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, Episode 9. Husker Nation is more like a state of discontent. The reason? A 42-35 loss at Oregon last weekend. A game we will discuss a lot in this podcast, and we will also look ahead to this Saturday's game against Northern Illinois. I'm Travis Justice. Let's bring in the man with the brains, the doc who talks, former pipeline pancake specialist, Dr. Rob Zadiska.
How many more adjectives are you going to... an adjective?
What, the pipeline pancake specialist? Or is that an adverb? Or is that a... I'm not very good with sentence structure by any means.
Well, when we're drinking beer, no.
So I don't know. I don't know what it would be. A pipeline pancake specialist. Now you're going to make me think about the grammar portion of that.
You're
going to
be
long.
Thinking about this all night.
I am, and I wish I wouldn't do that. But how you doing, Doc?
I'm well. I mean, other than watching the Nebraska game.
Well, you know, as Mike Riley says, it really is this.
There's a chance to build off of how we finished and a really, really good opportunity to learn from how we started.
Do you believe that?
So you're saying there's a chance. Sorry, couldn't help it.
We will get more into that in just a little bit. Time now for the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. This week, we're going really unconventional. We're going to focus on Dakota Talman. He's a redshirt junior from Eastern Michigan. Now you're saying, Travis, why the hell are we even talking about Eastern Michigan? Well, I picked Dakota this week because, Rob, the Eagles, out of the MAC, are coming off their first ever win against a Big Ten team ever, a 16-13 win over Rutgers. Talman is 6'5", 300 pounds. He played in all 13 games a year ago, but get this, mostly on special teams. So Dave put him on the watch list without even being a starter at center.
Based on potential.
Yes.
And now this guy also, he did play as a redshirt freshman. Yes. I think he played in 8 games as a redshirt freshman. Kind of a pretty, you know, for a guy that ended up at a directional Michigan school, the guy actually was a reasonably highly recruited guy. I mean, a number of schools came after him. I mean, it wasn't like it was Penn State and Ohio State.
Because he's from Ohio.
He is. I can't even
pronounce the town he's from.
Elyria,
Ohio.
Elyria, Ohio.
Say it like you know it, and it sounds to be genuine.
Do you know if it's Elyria?
I have no idea, but
it looks
sounded
like
good.
It's Elyria.
Eastern Michigan off to a 2-0 start. They play Ohio next on the 23rd of this month. I'm pretty good friends with Chris Creighton, the head coach at Eastern Michigan, and he used to be the head coach at Drake. And so before
Drake's got a football team?
Yeah, it does. It's a Division I AA. Or FCS non-scholarship. So it's in there with Dayton, Georgetown.
Non-scholarship.
Non-scholarship.
In other words, they don't win lots of games.
Well, they're actually a pretty decent one, and the winner of the Pioneer League goes on to the FCS playoffs, but they don't compete at the highest level because once they have to play against, you know, the North Dakota States of the world, it goes downhill pretty quick. But I will say this about Eastern Michigan. If you win there, get the hell out as fast as you can. Because that's a hard place to win. That's a place they were thinking about dropping football a couple of years ago. Now he's got a guy who's on the Remington Award
well,
watch list.
And they're winning games.
Yes.
Which all you look at Eastern Michigan, you look at Western Michigan, those two schools have done well within that division.
Well, Eastern has. Eastern's been like the bastard child of the directional Michigan schools. And it's been bad for a long time.
You
that's
don't think,
why,
like Northern Michigan's awesome? Of course, that's where Perella came from.
Hey, the Remington Trophy is given annually to the nation's top center. It's named after former Husker great Dave Remington. The Remington Trophy presentation took place January 13th, 2018 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For event and ticket information, go to remingtontrophy.com.
That means that we are drinking a beer.
Nebraska's own Infusion Brewing Company is the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. This week, we are drinking a new brew that was just tapped last week. It's called the Florbrasca. Now, here's why. It's a sour guava IPA that was brewed with Mastery's Brewing Company out of St. Petersburg Beach in Florida. It's a unique IPA that was brewed with Pilsner malt, flaked maize, lactose sugar, and guava. It is absolutely, Rob?
It's freaking good.
5%, alcohol percentage, and I'm telling you right now,
it's a good beer.
It's a special. Again, this was a cooperative, collaborative brew with it, and that's why they call it the Floor Brasca. They tapped it last Thursday. I actually went up to Infusion. I invited you to go to bingo night at the Infusion in Benson, and that's
sorry,
the, no, that's fine. Football. That's the night they tapped it, and I drank the first one of the first glasses of it, and I fell in love. I know it's hard to say that you're in love with a liquid and a beer, but I'm in love with this beer. And the weird thing about it, Rob, is the first couple drinks, I was like, oh, it's okay. But the more I drank it, the more the sour came out.
Which is not an overpowering
no.
sour, because we've had... We've had
Distill on here.
Distill's their...
They're Flanders Red.
Yeah, that specialty sour series they put out. Man, those will make you freaking pucker up. Holy crap, those are sour. I mean, those are almost painfully sour.
Now, this isn't
that bad, but it's also kind of got that almost like that bitter bite to it, like a decent IPA. But again, even that's not overpowering.
And I'm trying to figure out on my palate if the sour is at the front or the back, or the bitter is at the front or the back. And I almost think it switches every time. And like you said, the bitter and sour together is like chemically not possible, but they've made it possible.
Yeah, you're mixing an acid and a base here to get that. It's just, I don't know why this hasn't exploded yet, but it's a pretty damn good beer, though.
It's a really good beer. Now, it's just 5% alcohol, so I don't know if we can get Rob ripped tonight.
That means we can drink a lot of it.
Infusion Brewing with two locations in the Omaha area. Do us a favor when you visit. Can you tell them you heard us talking about their beer on the podcast? It's not that hard. Just go and say, hey, heard the doctor and Travis talking about you on the podcast. Love to try this beer. This week we're drinking the Floor Brasca. Last Thursday I was at their Benson location for beer and bingo. Had a great time and going to be going back. So check them out at infusionbrewing.com. Time now for listener email. If you have a question, you can always send it to doctalksports@gmail.com or you can ask on Twitter @doctalksports. Our first question comes from Rob. Not you, Rob.
It wasn't me, I swear.
A different Rob. Could you please discuss Pearson L and his fair catching? I'm starting to think we might need someone else back there if he can't get over his fear.
Did we talk about this?
No, we did not.
Three podcasts
we
ago?
We talked about who you thought he was going to be the underperformer.
But we kind of went into why. Man, I had people tweeting about the psychology of this. Okay, and you know, I shouldn't nitpick. It is a good question. Honestly, I think a lot of it's kind of the whole, there's a reason adults don't climb trees anymore when they did as kids. You know, it's you fall out a couple of times and you're a little kid, it doesn't hurt you much. And then all of a sudden when you're an adult, you're sitting there going, I don't know how smart that was. And you start second guessing the decision making process. I think with Pearson L's situation, you've got a guy who's had two or three just absolutely devastating injuries. I mean, you got a guy who as a freshman was an absolute game changer. And at times as a sophomore, but he has lost the better part of the last two seasons because of these really devastating injuries. And it has a psychological effect where I think for a lot of guys, you almost kind of start to, you start guarding things a little bit. That first step's not as quick. That no fear where you'll see a guy not fair catch with a couple of defenders right in their face. They're not going to put their hands up. They're going to catch the ball. And they've got that, like I said, just that complete, utter lack of fear that allows them to do that and then take off running, not thinking about the fact that they might get just absolutely waylaid. But it's that complete lack of fear that also allows them to do some of those incredible things in terms of the quickness, the moves they put on people, the ability to do that. I mean, I remember watching Tommy Frazier as a true freshman at Missouri, and the guy was literally just hurling himself over defenders to get a first down and doing it. And half the reason he was able to do it, part of it was ability, but the other part of it was he didn't know well enough to know that he wasn't supposed to be able to do that. And I think Pearson L, those injuries that you go into a little bit of a shell, you got a little bit of that guarding, you lose that no fear aspect of your personality, And all of a sudden, you start seeing more fair catches. You start seeing a guy who maybe doesn't put just those devastating moves on a guy, because he, somewhere in the back of your mind, in the complete subconscious of his mentality, there's a little voice saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't plant that foot quite as hard. What's going to happen to that surgically repaired knee?
So
that's something that you see happen with a lot of guys who have even one devastating injury. Guys don't want to test it. And like I said, it's almost subconscious.
So would you put somebody else back there? Would you say, you know, you're not the guy that's going to be the return guy?
Well, the play in question, I mean, there was one where he made a fair catch, and there wasn't anybody within 4 yards of him. And even I'm sitting there looking at the TV screen going, why did he fair catch that? I mean, it's to the point now where you get a guy in the situation he's in with that, like I said, that loss of the no-fear mentality that he's sort of calling fair catch as a preemptive strike.
Do you believe
guys aren't even close to him?
Do you believe they're kicking away from him? Because that's what he's saying. He said they're kicking away from him.
You know, sometimes yes, sometimes the ball's going towards him, and I've seen him fair catch it. So I mean, he would sit there with a couple of guys within 18 inches of him and not call fair catch. He'd catch it and just dare guys to tackle him. And you don't see that anymore. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, he's still a pretty sure-handed guy. I would be interested to see from a playmaking standpoint what a guy like Spielman could do.
There you go. Rob, thanks for the question. Ben in Ohio asked, the receivers didn't seem to be able to create much separation in the game against Oregon. Was that a result of good coverage, poor route scheme, or a combination of those factors?
I think there's a few factors that played into it. I think the routes were there. I think the scheme's fine. I don't think there's much wrong with that. I think two things. One, Oregon actually has some very good defensive backs. They've got some good ball players. Number two, and this goes along with number one, just incredible team speed on both sides of the ball. We're talking Oregon's defense now, but their speed is just unworldly, and it's across the board. The other thing is, and I still think this is something that'll get cleaned up a little bit, but I think Tanner Lee still puts too much touch, too much loft on his balls. He's given guys time to get there. And that's where you see that distance between the wide receiver and the defensive back close. Those guys are open. I think Tanner's not throwing the ball on time. I think he holds on to it too long. Now, like I said, I'm not a quarterback guru. I'm not an offensive genius. But again,
But you're a genius nonetheless.
In some stuff. But when you watch him play, like I said, we've talked about this the past couple of weeks. A three-step drop is supposed to be, in a perfect world, step, 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 throw the ball. You plant that third step, and that's your plant for the throw. If it's a five-step drop, that fifth step, when that foot hits the ground and plants, that's your plant foot for the throw. And he's coming back, and some of it, I'm sure, is just a little bit of a lack of confidence. And I'm going to say this, in the guys he's throwing to, and I'm not saying Tanner Lee sitting there going, okay, I don't trust these guys. He just hasn't thrown to them enough. I mean, it takes half a season for a guy to develop that, half a season of game repetition for a guy to have that sort of, again, it goes back to the sort of the subconscious mentality of an athlete. There's a degree of subconscious faith or trust that a guy has that, hey, when I plant that foot on, whether it's a three-step drop, a five-step drop, or a seven-step drop, the receiver is going to be where he needs to be, and I just got to get the football there. And I'm just not seeing that from him. He holds on to the ball too long. The defender closes the gap. When he does release it on time, it's like he's trying to put too much touch on the ball. I'm going to make this a really catchable ball, puts a little bit of extra loft on it, makes it a catchable ball. But the other problem is that you're giving the defensive back about three quarters of a second to get there. And for a college defender, that's an eternity.
Is that something you can get away with at Tulane, but you can't get away with it at, in the Big Ten or the Pac-12?
I saw it against Arkansas State. I saw their defenders coming in and doing the same thing where I'm sitting there going, receiver's open, throw the ball. Okay, now he threw that shit, receiver's there.
And a split second can mean everything.
Oh, yeah. And at the, you know, or he'll throw the ball on time, but a guy that just hangs up in the air too darn long. And that results, again, in the defender being able to close the gap, get themselves into position to deflect the pass. And yeah, I don't think it's a Tulane Nebraska thing. I don't think it's something that he got away with at Tulane. I doubt he would have there either. This is stuff high school quarterbacks don't get away with.
Hey, do you have a question for Dr. Rob? Send it to doctalksports@gmail.com. Or you can reach out to him on Twitter at DocTalkSports. As you see, we read the questions that come in. There's some good ones. I want to thank Ben in Ohio and Rob for tonight's questions. Again, if you have questions, DocTalkSports@gmail.com. Hey, losing a game is not a reason to jump ship. Husker Hounds is the place to shop when you want to show your big red pride. Three locations in the Omaha area and the best Husker online shopping experience at HuskerHounds.com. Voted Best of Omaha 2017, first place. Husker Hounds. Looking for tickets to the game against Northern Illinois? Or how about tickets to Garth Brooks in Lincoln? Or how about Tim McGraw and Faith Hill at the CenturyLink Center in Omaha? Or the just-announced Bob Dylan show next month at the CenturyLink? Ticket Express has them. In fact, for 25 years, Ticket Express has had tickets to every event you've wanted to go to. Check them out at TicketExpress.com. Make sure to sign up for their newsletter because each week they send out the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. That's Ticket Express at TicketExpress.com.
Way too much inconsistency. Way off balance with what we need to do. Sharpness, all those parts. We have to get better.
Can you believe we're saying that? I mean,
that's pretty generic.
It is very generic coach speak, but it's the truth. They're not very good, are they? And I'm disappointed because I had this team at 10 wins. I really thought they were going to go out to Oregon and win. I thought better of them.
Here's the thing, and this, I don't know. Maybe Oregon's going to go on a tear here and rip off a 10 or 11 win season. I don't think Oregon's that good.
And
I still don't. Now, I think they've got potential. I think they've got more freaking track athletes on that football team than anybody in the country. But I don't think as a football team, I'm not convinced they're that good. I think what you saw in the second half is kind of what you're going to see for a good chunk of this season in terms of what Oregon's capable of doing. And they just gutted Nebraska's defense that first half.
You were questioning Bob Diaco on Twitter during the game.
Okay, here's my thing. And like I said, guess who's paying me to coach football?
Nobody.
Nobody. So please take that into account. Please take it with a little bit of a grain of salt. That being said, you know, you can blame the players in terms of not being talented enough. You can, and that's a type of blame. I mean, it's kind of as a guy's only born with so much talent, but there's two areas of fault that you put on a player, and it's either A, they're just not talented enough, or they didn't execute. Bottom line is, though, even with those two things being taken into account, even if your players aren't executing, that still comes back onto the coaching staff. If you've got a football team and they consistently don't execute your game plan, sooner or later you got to look to yourself. Maybe the scheme's fine. Maybe the 3-4 is fine, which there's nothing wrong with a 3-4. Plenty of coaches in the past, today, and in the future will run the 3-4 and will be incredibly successful doing it. So the scheme's not the issue. It's how you're coaching it how you're preparing the players, how you're getting your message across, how you're trying to teach the players to run your schemes. So if the players are consistently not executing, I understand it's the players not executing, but that means there's a problem with how you're teaching them to execute.
Did Nebraska play that much better in the second half, or did Oregon
They played a little bit better in the second half, but Oregon, God, they went into prevent mode on both sides of the ball, offense and defense. They were giving up offensive yardage to Nebraska, essentially playing kind of a prevent defense. They didn't want to give up a big play. They didn't want to give up a big score. And how many times do you watch a team go into prevent mode late in the game, trying to protect a lead? They go into prevent defense, and teams march up and down the field on them. Prevent defense sucks. God, I hate it. It's the worst defense on the planet, and for some reason, all football coaches think it's the greatest thing ever when you've got a lead. They went into prevent mode, and Nebraska went up and down the field on them. The other thing is they did it on offense too. Oregon was absolutely gashing Nebraska with the passing game in the first half. All of a sudden, they started running the ball in the second half. They were trying to burn clock. Their logic was, let's get through the second half as fast as we can, protect the lead, go home, celebrate a win. And both philosophies backfired. Well, I shouldn't say the one philosophy on both sides of the ball backfired. All of a sudden, it's a one-touchdown game at the end. And Nebraska, they had their opportunities to put together a drive and tie it. They just weren't able to do it.
So with that prevent offense, prevent defense that Oregon ran, which it sounds like you're giving more credit to Oregon, or crediting Oregon for backing off more than giving Nebraska credit for making a comeback.
And Nebraska did some good things. You know, wait, here's the other thing. When they weren't turning the ball over, Nebraska moved the ball in the first half. They had drive stall, yeah, penalties, turnovers, et cetera, that were killer. But they actually moved the ball okay in the first half. So, I'm putting the lion's share of the blame here on Nebraska's defense, and I don't necessarily think it's the players. I truly think there's an issue somewhere here in terms of teaching this system or whatever the overall philosophy that Diaco has. I think there's a problem in terms of how he's getting it across to his players. And at least two games into the season, they haven't picked it up yet.
Let me ask you
now,
this.
Now, maybe he could do I'm not going to change anything. In the last four games of the season, they're going to all of a sudden click and get it, and it's going to be an utterly just devastating defense, and next year Nebraska's going to own the Big Ten with it. But at least at this point in time, I don't think guys are either A, understanding things fully in terms of how to defend to use this defense, or B, maybe there is a problem with the scheme. I mean, the teams we've played against, when you look at both Arkansas State and Oregon, their quarterbacks have sat back there, just they have had so little pressure. I mean, Nebraska, I think they're what, I saw some stats somebody put out there, second to last or tied for last in 1A football for sacks, with like one sack through the first two games. Now, I'm sure there's something like 23 teams with one sack that we're tied with, but still not a stat you'd like to see.
Let me ask you this. We are in year three of the Mike Riley era. What is
the problem is that there, you got to hit
squirrel.
There's a little bit of a reset button hit here, because all of a sudden Tommy Armstrong's gone. The offense is completely revamped. This looks freaking nothing like what we've seen the last 2 years.
And
this is so unlike anything we've seen. The run game, which has been effective at least with Trey Bryant, is a completely different animal than what we've seen the last 2 years.
So
the defense is a brand new defense. This is year one all over again.
Okay, and that leads into my question. What's the identity of this football team? And is there one?
If
no. You just answered it.
They really don't have one right now, other than, like I said, if they can make, I don't know how Trey Bryant is. We'll get to him in a little bit. I got a 9-to-5, so I don't know the extent of his injury because I was working all day, literally up until about 20 minutes before I walked in your front door.
But I served you a beer right away.
And I love you for that.
See? It's an infusion Florbrasca.
It's a, God, that's a tasty beer. You know, as long as, if Nebraska can maintain their running game and Tanner Lee can improve on the things we've talked about, get rid of the ball quicker, don't put so much loft on it, trust the receivers. I think offensively they're going to have a really good identity as a somewhat hard to defend against pro-style offense with a really nice balanced run and passing attack, which is exactly what every offense in the country is dying to be. Defense, boy, that's a goose egg identity right now. Well, there's no identity there.
You bring up Trey Bryant, and here's what Mike Riley had to say about his running back.
You know, he's had the bad knee. We've been careful about him in practice. We'll be careful with him again. He may not practice today. We'll see what he's like Tuesday and Wednesday and be able to make a better decision about him playing this week. No later than before Wednesday's practice, we'll probably need to go one way or another there with Trey.
He says the knee is older than his age. I don't know if we got anything there.
That's not good when the guy's in his second year in college.
But the interesting part is Mike Riley's not going to rotate running backs. If Trey Bryant is healthy, he carries the football. He's already carried 51 of the 58 carries. That's a lot of carries in today's game.
When was the last time you saw a Nebraska running back get that, though? I mean, that's 29. That's an average of 29
carries. Burkhead had a couple of those, but not...
Not consistently. Not consistently. But he was the only guy they had on offense.
So if he's not going to make it in, Mikael Wilbon will be the next man in. Divine Ozigbo stays on the bench. Mike Riley says
You need to educate me on Divine.
Well, let's hear what Mike Riley has to say about Divine.
Our thought is that whenever Divine will be called upon, he will play well. And so we just keep coaching him and getting him ready. If Trey does not play this week, then Jalen Bradley will move into his role and Divine will move into Mikhail's role and Mikhail will start the game. And we will do well.
I want to know what Divine Ozigbo has done to carve out just this hardcore carved in granite spot
on the third team?
In the coach's doghouse.
I think Trey Bryant's a better running back than.
I think Trey Bryant's an excellent running back. I think he's, in terms of running, blocking, and catching, I think he's the best Nebraska has.
But
I'm yet to see Mikael Wilbon do anything that makes me look at him and go, oh, God, thank God we've at least got Wilbon on the roster. Ozigbo at least has shown at times that he's gotten into games. The kid's a hard runner. I mean, he's a freaking truck to bring down. I mean, he hits hard. He's not going to win races with a defensive back by any means, but the guy hits the hole hard. He's hard to tackle. And he's a load at running back. And he's got some talent as a runner. It just seems like he kind of goes in these, like, half-season spurts of getting playing time and doing well, and then the rest of the time he's riding the bench. And I'm trying, I got to be honest, I'm trying to figure out, is this a case of where he just lacks a cognitive grasp of the offense?
That's what I was going to ask you, because the offense this year is different than it was last year.
Yeah, did all of a sudden he take a step back because he spent the last 2 years learning the Mike Riley / Tommy Armstrong offense, and he finally had it down, so he had some good playing time the last couple of years, and then all of a sudden this year they hit the reset button, go to this brand new offense, and he's sitting there, his head spinning, he's got no idea what the hell he's supposed to do. I don't know. I find it incredibly odd that you got a guy who, at least in terms of his on-field performance that we've seen in the past, has been generally at worst solid, and the guy can't get past third string this year.
Bradley from Bellevue West, the freshman, moving up the charts as well.
And this is a guy that the one thing I have heard, like I said, I hear nothing coming out of Lincoln about Divine Azigbo. Jalen Bradley, you do hear stuff about, and the thing that you hear is that he surprised the coach's staff. He's picked up the offense quicker than anybody expected him to. He's developed quicker than anybody expected him to. And he's a guy who next year, I think it's going to be, assuming everybody stays healthy, next year the two running backs who you're going to see out on the field is going to be Trey Bryant and Jalen Bradley, which I'd love to see a local kid at running back, because I'm thinking back to the days when you had Damon Benning and Amon Green and Clinton Childs hanging out in the backfield, and all of them could play.
Other injuries, a lot of guys questionable. Josh Kalu is going to be questionable for this weekend with a hamstring.
And that's a bit of a blow. I mean, when you're talking about a defense that's already, they're hurting across the board. I don't mean that from a physical pain injury standpoint. I'm talking about a performance standpoint. Losing a guy like him can be really painful. And maybe we're not taking injuries into account. Maybe losing is a Chris Jones who got injured earlier during fall camp. I mean, you got another guy there who was supposed to be an excellent, excellent spot at corner. All of a sudden, he's out. So, I mean, maybe this lack of depth from these injuries is bigger than what we were maybe giving it credence earlier in the year.
Of course, Northern Illinois comes to Lincoln on Saturday. The Huskies 1-1, and they aren't the MAC threat they were a couple years ago. A couple years ago, they're a pretty darn good football team.
They've had some very good seasons.
They lost to Boston College in the season opener, beat Eastern Illinois last week. They're going to run some kind of a hybrid of what Arkansas State did and what Oregon did. You can bet they're going to try to pass, whether they can or not.
I think everybody is at this point. Well, and here's two things. Nebraska did very solid in the run game against Oregon. I mean, Freeman was the guy that I was worried about going into the Oregon game. I wasn't worried about them gutting us with the passing game. I was worried about some weird-ass spread option and Freeman just destroying us. And that was the guy, and that was the aspect of the offense that Nebraska's defense actually did well against, was the run game. Same thing against Arkansas State. They held them to 80 yards rushing the week before. It's just when you're giving up freaking 790 yards passing a week, it's not that bad, but feels like it. Does a running game even matter at that point? So I'm not too worried about Northern Illinois.
Are you going to the game?
I am. I say I'm not worried because if we manage to beat Arkansas State at home, Northern Illinois is a far cry quality-wise from Arkansas State.
Nebraska's matchup with Northern Illinois is the first against a current member of the MAC Conference since a victory over Western Michigan in the 2008 season opener. Nebraska 5-0 all-time against members of the MAC, with single victories over Western Michigan, Akron, and Ball State, in addition to two wins against Northern Illinois. Including the four meetings with Northern Illinois, Nebraska has seven games scheduled against MAC foes between 2017 and 2023.
You got to fill that slot in the schedule.
I'd rather do it with a MAC school than an FCS school.
Oh, I would too. I mean, anytime you can take a true 1A school, you got to do it. I still would like to see another Big Ten game thrown into the schedule.
You want a 10-game schedule? I wouldn't. You know what? It wouldn't bother me that much.
I would like to see it. I got to be honest. I have so much trouble getting excited for Northern Illinois.
You know what I like about
that I look at Rutgers and go, okay, now here's a game I want to watch, but.
And it's hard. You can't do it in the Big Ten because there's too many teams. But what I like about the Big 12 even though it's a 9-game schedule, everybody plays everybody. I like the round robin. Speaking of the Big 12, Oklahoma beat Ohio State. Barker Mayfield plants the Sooner flag at the 50-yard line of the horseshoe.
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield. I don't know why. Barker. Baker Mayfield. I did that this morning on the radio, too. Then he apologized for it. He didn't have to apologize for that. Did you think he had to?
It's a little bold.
The reason
I say that, it's sort of one of these, it is a little in your face.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool too.
I'm one of these guys. I don't hate Ohio State. I hate Michigan. I don't hate Ohio State. Like a lot of Nebraska fans, I did watch that game. It was a fun game to watch. I still got sort of that old school Big Eight Oklahoma nostalgia.
There's a connection there. Absolutely.
It is. I guarantee you that 90% of Husker fans want to see Oklahoma do well, unless they're playing Nebraska.
Hey, the Sooners move up to number 2 in the country. Alabama still number 1. 4 Big Ten teams in the top 25. Penn State is number 5. Michigan number 7. Ohio State drops to 8, which means Ohio State's still in the playoff hunt. Very much so.
They are. They are. They've had some ugly losses and still made it in. Michigan State had a pretty ugly loss a couple of years ago. Still made it into the playoffs.
Wisconsin comes in at number 10. That's it in the top 25. However, Iowa and Michigan State are getting votes. But
Spartans, baby, they're back.
And Iowa, I mean, you and I were texting back and forth as Iowa came back to beat. They were up 10 in the fourth and down 10 in the fourth against Iowa State.
I got to be honest. I am surprised they came back.
Well, that shows you what turnovers can do, because Iowa State's up 10. Iowa then scores a touchdown. Iowa State gets the ball back, and Iowa State's offense looked pretty good. I mean, Jacob Park's a pretty good quarterback. Montgomery's a really good running back, but he throws an interception deep in his own territory, and Iowa gets the ball at the 5. Now, they should have punched in a touchdown, but they only score a field goal. But that was momentum. And I thought Nate Stanley...
Well, and it was points. You tie it at the end. And
yeah.
Wadley, the run Wadley had at the end of the game to...
Wadley's pretty good back.
Yeah, to send it into overtime. That was just a gut punch.
So, yeah, that's a lot of action in the Big Ten. We're getting closer and closer to kick off that conference season. But, again, Nebraska at home Saturday to play Northern Illinois. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. We hope you enjoyed the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. For more information on the Remington Trophy presentation, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. I want to thank our good friends at Husker Max, the official distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. For all the latest Husker news, message boards, all sorts of good stuff, check out HuskerMax.com. We'll be back next week right here on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.